This season at the First Time Podcast, we are returning to our first time roots. We hear all the time from listeners who've gone from thinking about writing a book to starting to write a book to having their very own debut author experience.
One of the things that these new authors say is that they've gone back and listened to all the episodes that cover off the various milestones. So this year we're going back too. We want to capture that first time again ourselves. We're going to follow a first-time author across the year, catching up multiple times along the way.
Our very first follower first-timer is Megan Rogers, author of The Heart is a Star. This segment of Follower First-Timer is brought to you by HarperCollins. Megan Rogers, we're back. It's been a little while since the two of us spoke with you. How are you going?
I'm really well, thank you. It's really nice to see you guys. I mean, it's kind of, this sounds really trite, but yeah, I feel like we've kind of come this little journey together and I feel this kind of kindredness. Is that a word? Kindredness?
No, it sounds good though.
Sounds good. Yep. With you both, and appreciate your time and your mentoring. So I feel really honored to come back now, because I think sometimes you only have one conversation with people, you know, whereas you've been part of my journey. And I just guess I wanted to say thank you for that too, from the beginning, the outset. Yeah.
Oh, we love that.
That's very lovely.
This is our sixth episode with you. It's now been 3 months since the book came out. So we're going to start there. What have the last 3 months looked like?
I don't remember the first month. Honestly, you know, when you, I mean, not that I have many nights like this anymore, but you know, when you're young and you kind of get drunk and you wake up the next morning and you have to text a friend. Well, I wasn't texting back then. I was calling to say, did I do anything really stupid? Mm-hmm. It was a little bit like that for me. You know, I had to kind of ask people who were at different events if I'd been really stupid or said anything really embarrassing, or because I think I was in such, I don't mean this in a bad way, but I was in such like fight or flight mode often. You know, my nervous system was just really jangly and I was continuously putting myself pretty far out of my comfort zone. So I don't remember the first month. It was really busy and it was amazing and incredible and beautiful, but I don't have a real sense of exactly what it was like, other than it was busy and at times overwhelming, both in a really, really beautiful, joyous way and in a, I just want to put my head under the bed covers and with my hot water bottle and maybe not come out for.
Well, this is the thing, right? Because we know it's such a roller coaster, the good feelings and the bad feelings. And, you know, as we know from everyone we talk to, writers work for such a long time hoping to get their book published. And then you expect that it's just going to be butterflies and rainbows and joy. And it's often not like that. But let's go with the best stuff, the good feelings. What have been some of the best feelings and best moments since we last spoke to you?
Oh, that's a good question. And I think maybe thinking about the extremes does stick in your head a little bit more, but definitely my little girls have been, hands down, and my family, my beautiful husband too, and having him there at the launch and having him, you know, see me as me. I think I've realized through this journey that most of the people in my life, and that's partly my own doing, hiding away from the world and making myself really small. But, you know, a lot of people hadn't seen me as just me doing what I love. You know, I've been mum and wife and professional and all these other things. And I think that's a really joyous, joyous thing. And I actually feel, if I do nothing else in my life, you know, it wasn't even the public nature of it, was more the personal nature of just my friend, like my friends, you know. I had friends at school drop off coming up to me and saying, aren't you a dark horse? You know, because I would just like rock up at school drop off with my UGG boots on, my hair up, and then, you know, scoot home to work. And then, you know, I didn't share a lot of that myself with people. So that's been a real joy and a real something I will carry with me forever. It's been deeply gratifying and connecting with other people in my life, and my little girls, you know, just having them part of it. And you know, trying to bring them along, because initially, you know, I think when mum starts to do things that take you away from them, you know, there can be a little bit of a jostle between that, and in the end having them, you know, just proud, you know, seeing the pride in their eyes is, yeah, that's just a moment that I think sometimes I thought I might not ever get that in my life. You know, maybe because I felt like I was never really good at the things that they were doing. You know, I've got a daughter who swims, my other daughter plays soccer, and, you know, they swim and in the ocean, and I'm not the person on family holidays who's out there with the surfboard. And I've very, very often felt very lacking and very not courageous and not brave in family situations, because, you know, you're talking about water slides, right? Yeah. I'm not the water slide person. If you get a chance to listen to the episode, it's really, really beautiful. And I'm not the water slider, even though I want to be. You know, I remember driving on the back of a jet ski with my daughter, and she was really going for it, and I had to tell her to stop. And, you know, just feeling like that real uncool, boring, not courageous mum. So anyway, that's a long way of saying that was a highlight, feeling like I was being brave in my own authentic way. And the other things have definitely been connecting with other writers like yourselves and, you know, Carmel Bird and Kate Grenville and other people who I've connected with. And the final one is definitely booksellers. You know, I think for a long time booksellers had been such a beacon in my world as a reader. And, you know, I used to tell my little girls that if they ever get lost in a supermarket, to either find a mum or go to a bookshop, because I knew that if they went to a bookshop, then they'd be with good people. And to experience that as a writer, you know, the relationships that I've built with booksellers and how just generous, genuinely generous they are.
Looking at your Instagram feed, some booksellers have really been quite extraordinary in the things that they've done, haven't they?
So there's been one. So I've had a few ones. One bookseller from Neighbourhood Books, she made me earrings for my launch.
Oh.
Star and a little heart. I mean, right? Like, yeah, there's been so many moments when I've really felt unworthy of the generosity of people and humans. And that was one of them. You know, just everyone, every single bookshop, I can't think of any that I didn't feel that generosity. But yeah, the people made earrings. The Robinsons, you know, they did an event and, you know, made me this beautiful big heart picture where they had like paper mache'd almost like pages of the book, photocopied pages of the book, and then created this big heart, and it's massive, and like they handmade Birds of Paradise and everywhere, and then made my little girl's versions that I could take home and give them. It's just like, what?
That's incredible.
Right. Yeah. Amazing.
So lots and lots of good stuff. You know we're going to ask for the opposite, don't you? Can feel the question coming. Have there been moments that have been either surprising or challenging?
Yeah, they have. You know, I think nothing is ever always good or always bad. And even though some things are challenging, you know, in some ways that forges you as well. You know, I think that I was in a lot of difficult situations that, you know, talking about courage and talking about, you know, courage isn't always going to a bookshop and feeling a beautiful connection with a bookseller. Sometimes it's feeling really out of your comfort zone and learning that, you know, one of the lessons that I had to learn is that when this kind of thing happens, not everyone's really happy for you. And that's really confronting.
I don't think we've ever had anyone acknowledge that on this podcast. We've certainly had people talk to that.
Am I not?
Off-air.
Am I not supposed to acknowledge?
No, absolutely, Megan.
We want to follow you down this rabbit hole. Keep talking.
Yeah. Am I allowed to swear? Oh God. Yeah. No, you know what? I think it's important to acknowledge, because I think that maybe if I had heard people say it more, I would have been a bit more prepared. You know, and that's never about you, and it's never about stuff. And I have really tried to think about how I can be radically compassionate in those situations, rather than take it too personally, because, you know, I don't want to be what I'm doing, what I do and what I'm doing. I never want it to be something that affects people badly, and whoever those people are. And, you know, so if I was or am ever presented with a situation where, you know, somebody maybe isn't, you know, happy about what's happened, then I've really, really tried to just take a deep breath and feel a deep sense of compassion for the situation, trying to, and just acknowledge that, you know, maybe I've been that person before. I don't know. You know, I tried to also be really emotional about myself, and really, you know, I've never grown through avoiding things. And so, you know, I've tried to think about why at times in my life where I haven't necessarily been, you know, the super excited about, you know, someone else's, you know, successes or joys or happiness. You know, when your friend's getting married, or when, you know, or, you know, all these different things. And often we don't speak these things because it's human too, right? It's so human. And I don't think there's any shame in some of these emotions either, because, you know, we're all doing the best we can with what we've got and our own sense of our self in the world. And I think that though surprised me a little bit.
I think it's, I want to jump in and following you down this hole, because again, like Catherine said, yes, so important to talk about. I think it's interesting too that you've had an experience, I'm gathering from the way you're talking about it, where people were obvious about that to you.
Yeah.
Because I think from the flip side, and I know I'm certainly feeling this right now, as much as I want to be, you know, big-hearted and, you know, joyful for everyone, when I get on social media and look at the books that are coming out in the same week as mine, in the same month as mine, and later on, I can't do anything to help the green-eyed monster which rises up in me and goes, just give me a month, like, without a single other book coming out. There's nothing we can do about those feelings. And
when
other people experience success, particularly as creatives in such a difficult industry, you know, we have those feelings. So you're right in saying we need to acknowledge them, but it's off. Most often we never see that except if people put it in, you know, Goodreads reviews or they troll us.
I love the fact that you're saying that. And I have, through this journey, as you guys probably know better than anyone else, I've really, really tried to be with boundaries as honest and open as I can. And I think I had both people personally and on the writer side, I had a couple of really beautiful, candid conversations with a couple of amazing writers. You know, a couple of moments when, you know, I was talking to a writer who I adore, and she was incredibly vulnerable and honest. And she goes, I just hate you right now. And I love you.
Wow.
Hate you. And it was the most beautiful opening to a conversation, because I think we then had one of the most mutually beneficial and rewarding conversations that I've had. It was really good. And I really opened up about times that I've felt that way. And, you know, we really spoke about how we can, you know, especially I think as, you know, we're two women talking to each other, so, you know, people identify that way. And so we were talking about that type of relationship and community and how we can kind of honour it and push through the discomfort of it a little bit. And then, you know, so I, you know, the following thing, I like, you know, let's, so I invited her to kind of do this, you know, event thing with me. And so, you know, there are doors that open through the acknowledgement of those conversations.
Talking about vulnerability, because before the book came out, and as we've got to follow you, we talked about certain things that you were aiming to do and you were aiming not to do. So we want to just check in on those.
Sure.
In terms of that vulnerability, and particularly in relation to social media. You were pretty active on social media before the book was even on the horizon, but you did mention that you wanted to try to be more vulnerable on the socials. Have you used social media the way you expected, or what's been different? What's changed?
No, I haven't. No. All the best intentions, right? When I was first on social media, the only reason I started Instagram was this silly kind of story where I went to, this isn't big noting myself, by the way, but I went to Oxford to present my writing, blah, 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 right? But from that, there was a community on Instagram of academics that were talking, right? So we kind of all followed each other, and it was back in the day when people just followed each other very willy-nilly. So I had a few followers. Not really, probably because I was talking about anything great, but just because people were happy to follow back then. Less discriminate. And in the 9 months between, or there, you know, give or take, between me signing and the book coming out, I had never in the however many years I'd been on social media, Instagram, posted a picture of myself ever.
Really?
Never.
Wow. I didn't know that. Can I just point out for listeners, you would have had 10,000 followers, which is I had about eight.
Yeah, I had about eight going into it. Yeah, I had had something like eight going into it. You know, again, like a lot of I don't have any real idea about how that came about. Like, I think it was on the back of this conference that I did, and there was a lot of people who were all talking about these things to do with gender and academics, and so a lot of them were, you know, overseas as well. So, so I'd never posted a photo of myself. I had posted photos of the girls, which I removed because it wasn't ever really, even though I had all those people, it was quite a closed space because they were more academic-y kind of writing people. It wasn't too public. And I'd never posted a picture of myself, let alone talking. And I, you know, speaking to my agent, and he said, and a very, very good piece of advice, he goes, you're going to need to start practicing this because then you'll feel more comfortable when people are taking pictures of posting it and stuff. And I said, yeah, okay. And I still remember the first time I posted a picture of myself, I was sitting in the car park of the kids' school, and I had this picture on that said bibliophile, right? And, you know, stupid first, you know, foray into posting photos. So I was sitting like an idiot, right, taking a selfie, like, oh, I just even cringe just thinking about it. So I post it, not really looking at it, not realizing that the biblio was kind of a bit by my hair. And very quickly got quite a few messages saying, what's your t-shirt? Like, what is that saying? Anyway, so that was, and I very quickly deleted it, and it took me months
to recover,
to be able to post another photo. I just couldn't even.
Let this be a lesson to us all. See what happens to your t-shirt and your jacket with whatever the message is.
As uncomfortable as it is, look at the picture.
Always look at the picture.
Like, oh, properly.
Take 10. Choose the best.
I'm so like, and then I started doing it more, and I would post and delete many, many a time. And then, like, I would realize that some people would see it and then realize that I'd deleted it. And then I'd be up at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, oh my God, like, all these people have seen me post this and then delete it.
It's perfect, like, 3 a.m. fodder, isn't it? Really?
It took me months and months and months and months. And I had a few girlfriends who really just tried to help me through it. And and then did my first kind of talking to, you know, the camera or whatever you want to call it. And then went from there. So to answer the question, which I hadn't yet, I'm sorry. But what happened is I really wanted to be a little bit more vulnerable because I felt as though, you know, and still feel and worry about endlessly that it's too glossy and too, oh, look at me in my pretty dresses, look at my window and how amazing this is. What happened though is that I was doing so many kind of interviews and bookshop things. That's not meaning to say that, like, I'm amazing and out there. I'm just saying that, like, there was a lot of stuff where I was being really vulnerable. And I very quickly realized that I couldn't handle another space like that. And if anything, what I found Instagram was really comforting for was having a space I could just post stuff about the books.
Yeah.
I could just, you know, I could just take a breath and go, you know what, here's a space where I can just talk about the book, just post a picture, just talk about the book, maybe about the character or theme or a library event or stuff like that. And I almost used it as a bit of a safe space to come to in between all the vulnerabilities, which is interesting because it kind of flipped the way that I had thought about it. I think I will. I would really like to transfer what I've been attempting, maybe not always successfully, to do, you know, in interviews and in bookshop visits. I'd really like to try and do that more in social media to balance some of the other content, because I think I'll feel more comfortable with that. I think I just need to get to a space where I don't feel too unskinned, where I've put back, reapplied some of the skin, and I feel like I can come to that space. Like that.
One of the other things that we had talked about before the book came out was Goodreads.
Oh, yeah.
whether or not you were going to look. And at the time, I think your goal was that you would look, but you would be unaffected by the good or the bad.
Hilarious.
Which I remember that because I had a similar goal and changed it retrospectively, you know.
Oh, it's so funny. I think I have oscillated a lot. And so this was my journey. It's such a personal thing, isn't it? And I've been reading, like, it's interesting because there's all of these articles about Goodreads at the moment, like in the media and Guardian and all this
stuff. I was just looking at that, the R.F. Kuang one.
Yes, that's the one that I just read yesterday.
Brilliant. Amazing. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, because she's talking about, you know, yes, I get the principle that you stay off it, but I can't help myself. But also she goes into the idea of pile-ons, which is another really interesting thing. So, sorry, continue.
Oh, no, that's okay, because I really loved her vulnerability in talking about that too. And she pulls out some of the really great quotes and she's put them on her page. And I really appreciated a writer being really candid and honest about it. And so my journey was this. I kind of, before I even, you know, before the unskinning, de-skinning, unskinning. Anyway,
I say unskin.
Before the rawness, I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, I'll have a peek maybe. I had a very brief look the day of the launch.
We remember.
Yes.
We remember.
The first thing I said, I'm so sorry. How rude of me.
Not at all.
Oh, my God.
It was frank.
And looking back on it now, it was one of those, I mean, I think, I'll get to this, but I think there is a comedic element, which is actually quite, you know, I think if you sit in that spot a little bit, it's healthy as well. And I had had a very, one of those really quite funny one star kind of things where, you know, someone's just kind of, it is.
Despises it. Yeah.
It's funny. Like you just go, oh man, like.
Well, Claire Christian talked about that too in our interview with her, when she said she looks at Goodreads to get a sense of what the criticisms are going to be. And if they are things like, this book is too sexy, then she's like, cool, nailed it. Let's move on. Yes. You know?
And that's actually funny you say that, because I think that sometimes as a writer, you see the reviews and you're thinking, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do. Great. Hit the nail on the head. Beautiful. You know, I've made you uncomfortable. And I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but so I stayed completely off it all the way through, because I was, as I said, you know, feeling all the vulnerabilities, and I just thought, now's not the time. And I, up until a couple of weeks ago, had stayed with the mentality that I would not look at it and I would stay away from it and I would ban myself. And I would, you know, because I do have a lot of friends who live by the philosophy, and it's a beautiful philosophy, to really protect your heart and protect your energy. And I think that's a really good one. I think for me, I got to the stage, this was only like a week and a half ago, where, and I need to preface this by saying this is not for everyone. This is just a really personal thing. And it is all about timing, I realized, for me, in that I started to feel as though it was having power over me. Mm. It was starting to have a power over me. And it was a power that I didn't even know what it was. And I think, as I said before, it's never been good for me to avoid things. I don't think it's good for me to go in when the timing's wrong. Mm. But for me personally, I started to feel as though it was having a power over me that I thought, first of all, I don't want these people or comments to have power over me, you know? And So I spoke to a mentor of mine in the US. Her name's Phyllis Chesler, and she wrote Women of Madness, and she's one of those kind of 1960s feminist. She's incredible. If you watch the doco on her on Netflix, she's just incredible. And much of, you know, she's courageous and has been criticized, you know, to the nth degree, much more than I will be because she's much more successful. And she said to me, yeah, you know, I think you should go in and I think you should do it once. And I think you should sit with a glass of wine and I think you should read it all. And I think you should then let it go. And so I did. I sat one night with a jar of Nutella and a glass of wine. And I just sat there and I read through all them. And it was the most liberating thing one of the most liberating things I've ever done.
Wow. Because
I think that I had this, and I think sometimes with, you know, monstrous things, we a dentist, right? You think it's, I thought, oh my God, you know.
You build it up.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to really, really go there. And so, and of course, you know, with every, and the, I should preface this by saying one of the good pieces of advice that she gave me too was go in and have a look at the books that you love
and have
a look at all their reviews first, you know. So I went in and I had a look at Migrations by Charlotte McConaghy, which is one of my favourite all-time books, and The Shipping News and Thousand Acres. And
I love The Shipping News.
Right, one of my favourites. And, yeah, so I did that first. I was laughing a bit from like some of the, you know, I was like, yeah, oh, hilarious. And so I went in and I just read it all. And of course, you know, there are some really great comments there as well. And, I read them all. And then, on advice too, I wrote on a bit of paper, Goodreads reviews, and I have an open fire behind me, and I just threw the bit of paper in the fire and I went, that's fine. It's fine. And I just moved on.
Love that. Great advice. Maybe I'll be doing that later in the year. The other thing that we wanted to check in on, you said you were going to channel energy and thinking time into a new book. Have you had time to do that, Megan Rogers?
I have.
I totally expected that to be a no.
So I should say this. Okay. So, what am I going to say? So my next book I had in the works for a little while. It's not finished and I'm working on it. But in many ways, The Heart as a Star is the book that I had to write first because it was where the heat was for me. It was where the energy was. And, you know, I wasn't ready to write this next book, I think, as a writer. I needed to kind of just work some muscles first. And I was self-aware enough to kind of know that. But in many ways, this next book is, even though I adore The Heart as a Star and I, you know, there's a lot that I love about it, this next book is the one that I've always really wanted to write. So, yeah, so I have been working on it. It's, you know, it's not like I've like finished it and I'm sending it off like just to be clear. So it's not any expectations or that other writers don't think that I'm like knocking out one after the other, because that's not the reality of my life. Because I work a day job and I have two children. That's not the reality. Just be very clear to all the writers out there. It can be very triggering. I feel triggered when I see, you know, writers pumping out the books. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so lazy.
That's Chris Hammer, we're looking at you, by the way.
Chris. Oh my God, I was on a panel with him for Sorrento Writers Festival and I was in awe of him because I adore him. And I'm just like, I was like, I just wanted him to like rub off some of that on me, like osmosis. Yeah.
Honestly, and because for those crime books, they sometimes do similar covers, sometimes I'm like, is this another one? Are you serious, Hammer? Will you stop and give everyone else a break? Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I know, I'm not that, just to be clear. I had almost kind of at similar times, been thinking about this other book and obviously had to not, because we all know how all-consuming it is, especially in that year that you're really getting it out there. But I'd still, you know, make notes and think about it. And I'm working with an artist in America on some aspects and, you know, there'll be lots of beautiful stuff coming out, I'm sure.
Wow. Hopefully.
But I remember one of my favourite episodes, Kate, is when you talk about like redoing your Myers-Briggs type, and you did, remember when you, yeah, I just love that episode. I listened to it a few times before I went into kind of publicity things, because I took that as a really great idea and I went back and did mine, and I've always typed as a really strong INFJ. So I'm quite introverted, but I can come across as extroverted when I'm talking about something I'm passionate about, right? And so I'm happiest when I'm writing about something that I'm really passionate about. And I knew that when I was going back to hotel rooms by myself, because I'm an overthinker, and I was going from being, so this is maybe one of the things that struck me as a negative as well, personally, is I went from having the social anxiety of overthinking interactions, maybe one a day, maybe a couple a week, to having 50 a day, where I had 50 important to me conversations or interactions with different booksellers or events or stuff. And then I, you know, often was by myself for a few hours overthinking, everything, going, that person probably thinks I'm the biggest idiot now, or why did I say that? You know, I was nervous, and, you know, God, or I interrupted someone, or I was rude. I felt like I was rude, or all those things. And what I did was got the next book to a place where, a juicy place where I was really thinking about it, so that I could channel that energy. I'm not saying that I wrote thousands of words, let's be clear, but I could at least go down the rabbit hole of going, oh, I'm going to research this. Or I'm going to investigate this characteristic or this topic. And that helps me, and it helps my anxieties, it helps my overthinking. So it was also a real balm for those times.
Megan, I think we are up to the last question. As we said, 3 months looking back, is there any advice you would have given yourself now What advice would you give your former self, if any? If you were at the start of this process, is there anything you'd do differently?
That is a really, really good question. And it's actually not something that I have thought about at all, but I want to answer it really thoughtfully and honestly. I would say, you know, and we've spoken about this before, you know, the advice where, you know, we walk into a room and you go, how good is this? You know, that piece of advice that you guys are speaking about, which is beautiful. There were moments when I did that, but I think to extrapolate on that advice, when I was in those moments, I would try to be a lot more gentle on myself. You know, for me, it's not so much comparison that's the thief of joy. It's the self-deprecation, the self-judgment is the thief of joy for me. And I would say to myself, you will be able to be in the present moment and enjoy this a whole lot more if you are a bit more compassionate to yourself.
I love that. That's a lovely note to end on.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.